Fellow Freedom fans, David Allen Carmichael back here live. You listened to five broadcasts or five segments of what was some previously recorded shows, and it was a show that was recorded July of 2009. The reason I played it is because I listened to it the other day and it was really good. It was really touching on some things that we rarely discuss, and also it was an example of what I try to do here on my Preservative Talk Radio, is I try to get to the issues in such a way that we're not just arguing over political partisan passions. All that is divisive. That's just there to divide men, and particularly Christians, over something that philosophical arguments that are based on just they're frivolous. That's why you know, one of the things with when they were reviewing Justice Sotomayor and the concerns that people had about her decisions, I had to make sure that I actually read some of her decisions. I had to say, is she got a bent to undermine the law? Is she got a bent to judicial restraint, which is don't weigh in on the law if you don't have to? Now, some would say, but they're a judge. You're supposed to weigh in a lot. No. If they don't have to, it's better that they don't. Because men are vicious, corrupt, and degenerate. Broad is a way that leads to destruction. Many go thereby. And narrow is a way that leads to life. Few there are who find it. So a vast majority of the people are evil. So that most likely, you're going to have a tendency that there's going to be some evil people who are judges. Best way to undermine law is to have an evil person weigh in on it. That's why I encourage people, and people get discouraged when somebody's case is dismissed over a technicality. No, those technicalities, that due process is there to weed out things so that justice is got a better chance of occurring. These magistrates are supposed to be, they're supposed to be ministers of God for our good. So the problem is if they're bad and the more they weigh in on the law, they won't be fulfilling their purpose. One of the things that they were discussing right at the end of that segment was the Second Amendment. And Justice Sotomayor was saying, well, they don't really apply to the states. And at first you say, oh, that's horrible. The first thing I thought, was she nuts? Well, that's actually a legitimate argument. The only one, again, that I say doesn't, for sure doesn't, apply to the states very clearly is the Congress shall make no law establishing religion or preventing the free exercise thereof. That, it says Congress shall make no law. It doesn't say no law shall be made. It says Congress shall make no law. So it is in its, you know, almost expressly, is saying that it only applies to Congress. And so, but that's been ignored. And I think there is a, I think the states can have, they can have a state religion. Now, whether or not they impose it on somebody, that's a whole different thing. Now, the 14th Amendment was one of those things that says, okay, states, you're misbehaving, your people are being abused, and since you can't behave yourself, we're going to spank you at a high level. But Ms. Sonia Sotomayor said that the 14th Amendment and the Second Amendment do not connect a right to keep and bear arms for your protection from the state imposing some kind of restriction. Well, it's something that she's not understanding that the U.S. Supreme Court did understand, is that the right to keep and bear arms was predicated on absolute rights. Absolute rights. And I'm going to quote from Sir William Blackstone here. By the absolute rights of individuals, we mean those which are so in their primary and strictest sense, such as would belong to their persons merely in a state of nature. So, in a state of nature, does somebody have the right to keep and bear arms? So, go back, and I'm going to read Sir William Blackstone. This is written in 1766. So, those who wrote the Declaration of Independence, those who wrote the Bill of Rights would be very, very, very conscious of this statement by Sir William Blackstone. By the absolute rights of individuals, we mean those which are so in their primary and strictest sense, such as would belong to their persons merely in a state of nature, which every man is entitled to enjoy, whether out of society or in it. So you say, well, it only applies if they're out of society. No, it's an absolute right. Now, whether or not you agree with the right to keep and bear arms, that's, you know, that's between you and me. I'm not somebody who's an activist on it, but rationally, realistically, even biblically, I have to say, if I study the nature or the philosophy of law and the foundations of law, I have to be absolutely pro rights, pro gun rights, to keep and bear arms. What you do with them now is a whole different issue. See, just like speech, you can't have a law like this, the first case that we talked about. Had the thing been approached and said, that is a law against speech before it happens, you're prohibiting speech from occurring. You're not holding people accountable for violating the freedom of speech. You are prohibiting speech. As soon as you impose upon a sign maker that he's not allowed to publish something, he's not allowed to be paid to publish something, that the words of some other person, now you're prohibiting speech. So that's actually the first case. Was not a, there was a point about religion there, but the real violation of law was prohibiting speech, because a small political group who's offended by the words of the Bible are intolerant and bigoted. And so their particular bent of bigotry and intolerance was taking precedence over the right of all who have the ought to have the freedom to express themselves and only be accountable if they do something specifically that violates a common law, creates a common law injury against somebody. Going back to Mr. Blackstone, but with regard to absolute duties, which is man to is bound to perform, considered as mere individual, it is not to be expected that any municipal laws should at all explain or enforce them. So there's these principles of law that came from the creator. I'm going to go on and continue to read from Mr. Blackstone. He says, let a man therefore be ever so abandoned in his principles or vicious in his practice, provided he keeps his wickedness to himself and does not offend against the rules of public decency. Do you see that word decency? He is out of the reach of human laws. So, but now think about this, about the whole idea of this homosexual issue. It used to be behind closed doors. And there was this law that in Texas, I'll give you an example. There's this case, Lawrence versus Texas, where Texas had a law where it showed what the punishment would be for the crime of sodomy. It's a natural crime. It's an unnatural act. So it's a crime against mankind. It's a crime against God. It's a crime against it is a crime against nature. So there was a statute that talked about the punishment of it. Now, it is such a wrong, you don't have to have a statute saying it's wrong. It's wrong. Now, how you punish it, that is controlled in civil law. Well, guess what happened? I guess a bunch of activists invited a police officer over. I'm not really sure what happened, but he went in to respond to a call, and they say, who called? What was Mr. So-and-so? He's in that room. Police officer walks in. They're engaging in some kind of conduct that was unnatural. So he's like, what do I do now? So he cites them with this penalty. Well, instead of just taking the case and throwing it out, saying you shouldn't have been in there, it was outside your jurisdiction. Yes, they invited you in there, but guess what? You really, you know what? This is a point where it's a place that, you know, the person was inviting the policeman into his bedroom. There's something twisted going on, okay? That's a setup. Well, instead of throwing it out on that case where the policeman was in his private place, think about this. The U.S. Supreme Court said that it's unlawful penalty against sodomy because it's reaching into a place of privacy. Well, what if they do it on the street? See, this was no longer a place of privacy. It invited the policeman in. Let a man therefore be so ever abandoned in his principles or vicious in his practice, provided he keeps his wickedness to himself and does not offend against the rules of public decency. He's out of the reach of human laws, but he makes his vices public, though they be such as seem principally to affect himself, as drunkenness or the like, then they then become, and by bad example they set, a pernicious effects to society. Therefore, it is then the business of human laws to correct them. You know, nobody argued this in Lawrence versus Texas, I think. I'll have to double check it. I mean, I know a lawyer that was working on the case. But these are principles of natural rights and natural wrongs. They're no-brainers. in a place, whether you have a society or government or not, it basically a man has does the government has no right to take from a man that which is naturally his right. He has an absolute right for the, and this I'm going to go to Sir William Blackstone here, for the principal aim of society is to protect individuals in the enjoyment of those absolute rights which are vested in them by the mutual laws of nature. So there are absolute rights, there are absolute wrongs. And therefore, the principal view of human laws is, or always ought to be, to explain, to protect, and enforce such rights as are absolute. And then he goes on to talk about rights that are relative, those things that you gauge, like, I don't know, regulating different laws of agreements and contracts and commercial laws and the commercial code and all that kind of stuff. Those are the things that that is merely your relationship with another person in public. And that's those things that the government is there to do, but really to regulate conduct only in such a way so that it would protect your natural rights. I don't think, based on what I read of Judge Sotomayor, that she's thinking in these terms. If you go to a modern law school, you will not be taught to think in those terms. You're chasing court cases. You're chasing one-liners from court cases, where you pull a one-liner out of a court case and stick it in your case, and then hope that if you connect these one-liners together, they're going to explain your side. It's called sophistry. You say something, give a factual statement or a quote to such a degree that even if it conveys a falsehood, they think it's a good thing because they've won. They've by the preponderance of the evidence that they've presented to the court, excluding all the facts, so that what they've proposed will seem to have more weight. They feel like they're doing a good when they get a judgment in their favor. In truth, you're supposed to go to those cases, get those bullet statements, read the entire case to see whether that bullet statement that the case quoted actually argues against what you're trying to communicate. What is the facts? What are the facts? What is the truth? So those are deep things that, as we're going into these issues, we're going to go back to these fundamental principles. What has God provided? God has provided that it is not right for man to lie as with a woman, that it is an abomination. And there's nothing wrong with putting that on a billboard. Nothing wrong with putting it in a book. It's nothing wrong with saying it on a sidewalk. You may have a different opinion. Now, if I say you are a person who is the following character, then those are fighting words. But if I say this conduct is an abomination, that the biblical standard is that a man shall not lie with a woman, with another man as with a woman, and if I say that as an actual fact, it is not an offense. It's not intolerant. It is not bigoted. It's true, and you may disagree with it. It's not making an insult saying all abominable men that lie with women, you know, well, will burn in the lake which burns with fire, which is the second death. Well, that might be a truth. That might be a little bit provocative, but even under the principles of free speech, if it's an opinion that you are offended by, too bad, so sad. If you have adopted children, don't want them to think that way, well, have a discussion with them. It's not profane. It's merely a difference of opinion. David Allen Carmichael, Preservative Talk Radio. You can hear what we do and read more about us and find out about Freedom Ministries by going to preservativetalkradio.com. One of the things I've done with this show that we've played today is we actually put it up on the internet at faithfreedoms.net. Here shortly, it's going to be preservativetalkradio.net. But again, you can get to all these things by going to preservativetalkradio.net. So we look forward to having our Faith and Freedom show engaging these issues from a constitutional basis, biblical basis of right versus wrong. Again, preservativetalkradio.com.